What do you want to play, Sam?
We're going to play Take Me Out to the Ball Game. We're all going to sing it, too.
Another edition of Meet Me at Mutual. We're back. I'm Daniel. That's Alan. You'll find me at C7. You'll find him at AMedLock1. You know where we're at. Redbird Daily for Alan. C70 at the bat for me. Last week, we did not do the show. If you want to hear us, we did the roundtable discussion with a number of other podcasters and writers. It was a lot of fun. You'll find that under Conversations with C70 if you want to find that on iTunes or a lot of links on Twitter to that, or you'll also find a link at Redbird Daily under the podcast title if you want to listen to that. It was a good show, a good 2 hours of talking about what has gone wrong, what is going to go right, and all the fun stuff that goes along with that. Alan, we're going to jump right in. Before we do the Redbird Rewind, let's talk about the news of the day. And that would be that the Cardinals have promoted John Mozeliak to president of baseball operations, a new title, new position that they're creating just for him, and then promoted Michael Gersh from assistant GM to general manager. What are your initial thoughts on this, especially the fact that it's coming out, you know, basically 1 month before the trade deadline?
Yeah, the timing is the head scratcher on the deal. They kind of talked about it a little bit in the press conference, but didn't get too much into it. I think both of you and I and everybody, you know, in deeply involved had kind of seen this coming. You know, we knew with the contract running out, with Mozeliak's contract, up next year that this is going to be a possibility. And I think this is the model that a lot of professional baseball is going to go, just because I think there's, you know, with the analytics side of it, that the baseball ops department just has grown so much. It kind of tells me there's not going to be a whole lot of change. I was reading up some of the notes and stuff that were taken from the press conference, and I think Gersh has been involved just as much as Mozeliak has on just about any of those things. I think Mo has just been the face for a lot of these deals and for a lot of the issues that has arisen, that he's the one that approaches the press and takes care of it that way. I've noticed in the first, of course, you knew today he would get time at the press conference, but he also did two radio spots in St. Louis, and he did a little bit on the game, and you can tell that Mo had taken a step back. So I think that Gersh will be more of the face, but I'm not so sure from the top down if there's going to be much change.
That's the question. I mean, it is interesting. I told you that I thought that was interesting earlier this week when they were out in Arizona. And they demoted Alameda Diaz, and Gersh was the one that was on TV talking to Fox Sports Midwest about the move, being especially that it wasn't in St. Louis. It was kind of interesting to see, you know, the assistant GM, who we haven't seen very much of, make such a public statement. And so I felt like they were getting ready for him to be moved up. I didn't think it was anytime soon necessarily, but I thought that was kind of the idea.
Yeah.
And obviously it was a little bit sooner than we thought. Mo, I feel like somewhere along the way, and I don't know if it was at a blogger day, I don't know if it's in an interview somewhere, it felt like he wasn't going to be a GM for the rest of his life. And so that, you know, this lets him stay in the organization and gives him a few more responsibilities. I do think it's going to be very interesting to see how this power structure works. You know, they said on the broadcast tonight that Gersh has said obviously that Mozeliak will be in on any, you know, discussions and trade talks and things of that nature, but it really kind of sounds like final decision goes to him, and I think that's probably the case. It's hard to know. I tried to look up, you know, the Cubs have this organization, the Reds have this kind of organization, and I tried to look up, you know, some, you know, around trades, who gets interviewed. I mean, does Theo Epstein get talked to about the deal, or does Jed Hoyer? they couldn't really find anything for sure. So it's hard to know just where the power lies and who makes the final call. I do feel like this is probably going to be, at least at times, and I don't know about this year, I think that there may be a lot more mutual discussion this year because of where we are in the year. But going forward, I do think that Michael Gersh is going to be able to put his stamp on things with a little bit of autonomy.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's funny when you were kind of going through the organizations that have had it done. It's both Chicago teams. You know, Cincinnati's kind of done it with Jockety. Oakland's done it with Bean. Mm-hmm. You know, LA's done it. And you could just tell that that's kind of the model. And they had made that comment about how they felt like they were at the forefront of a lot of these deals. But at this point now, they don't want to get left. They want to keep up with how the market's moving. And it just makes complete sense. But yeah, it's funny. I love Mozeliak, and I'm a huge Mozeliak guy. But there's a time, too, when these changes are made where you're just like, okay, there's going to be a fresh, you know, I kind of like having the fresh point of view on it. You know, we'll kind of see how it goes. I don't, with Mo being, still being involved, you're not going to see a major tank. You're not going to see him go down the drain. You know, things are going to have to be a lot worse than that for that type of situation to happen. So I don't know. I'm kind of looking forward to it. I did a little background on Gersh. And he's really analytical driven. That's the one thing I think that we're going to that a whole lot, which kind of makes me wonder if he ran it last year, would this team be the same way? You know, would Fowler have been, he had a say in it, but would Fowler have been the deal that they made? You know, it makes you kind of wonder, especially with his defensive numbers being as bad as they have been, but that gets into the point too where I don't trust the base running in defensive numbers as much as some others. So that may be a part of it too.
Yeah, and you got to figure they have better analytics for that than we do, or at least a better grasp of it. I think that you're right. This is not changing philosophy of the organization. This is going to still be, you know, they're still going to do the similar type deals. Will Gersh be a guy that's able to expound or advocate for maybe a little bit broader move or a little bit more risky move? I don't know. Like you said, he comes from an analytical point of view. He's the one that, you know, as they've said, he got the job by emailing all these general managers. Turned out Mo took the bait on how to evaluate draft picks, put a dollar face on it. And I think that we have heard a lot about the Cardinals doing that over the last few years. And I think that, you know, obviously has been very valuable to them. So it would seem like he's the guy that's putting, what's the phrase, you know, dollars on the muscle or something of that nature. And I think that that's, you know, not likely to change going forward, with him in the driver's seat. So we'll see. I do think that it's probably going to be a while before we see a deal that we say, I'm not sure that Mo would have made that deal.
Sure.
And, you know. Again, it's very interesting. I think it's going to be very interesting to see what this trading deadline looks like and, you know, how much he's out there versus how much Mo's out there if they do make a deal. Lots of things like that. So, it was sudden. It was interesting. And it's kind of neat that, you know, some of us have now seen John Mozeliak go from, you know, promoted, in the wake of Walt Jocketty's departure to now promoted again. And we're getting a new GM, to try. I don't know. In Mo we trust sounded good. In Gersh we trust. Gotta get a little, you know, maybe we need a new phrase for that. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if it rolls off the tongue quite as much and, difficult to, you know, to get away from the Mo puns about his MO and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what we're gonna do as writers with Gersh's name, but we'll figure it out. So, any last thoughts on this move and what it means?
No, just the curiosity of it, just kind of like yourself. I'm just, you know, I don't think we'll see anything, I don't think we'll see any, I don't even know how to say it. We won't see anything that, catches our eye this year. I just think we'll see that Gersh will be the one with the camera in his face for the most part. And I'm sure Mozeliak probably appreciates that.
Yeah. And I think Mo's going to have fun with some of this new stuff. I thought it was very fascinating, the fact that he talked about the Cardinals looking for what can differentiate them from the other teams. And I think he said something to that effect while he was talking to us at Blogger Day this year. That, you know, they used to be a team that could draft real well. They kind of had edge in the drafting. They had an edge in evaluating. And a lot of those edges are gone now. People are doing the same thing. People are living the same way, if you will. They've got to find something new, some other, you know, frontier that they can be the best at. And being that Mo doesn't have to do the day-to-day stuff anymore, that gives him a chance to really, you know, deep dive and get a little theoretical and see what might help the Cardinals in that regard. And I think that's going to be very interesting to see what he comes up with and what direction that they try to go in.
Yeah, well, that's a great point. That could be pretty interesting. I kind of thought back too on what DeWitt III said when we were at the at Blogger Day, and you know, just mentioned all the business aspects of what's going on, and I thought, you know, this makes a ton of sense that they're putting the dividing line in the baseball operations department and the business department, and you know, you probably won't see them intertangle much.
Yeah, I think that's yeah, they do try to separate things out, but and it gives. You know, like I said, Mo gets a little bit of a chance to talk with Bill DeWitt on those things, probably in baseball operations. To some degree, they'll mesh him that way at a higher level. I don't think this obviously doesn't put him on the same footing as Bill DeWitt III, who's the team president overall, but gets him a little closer, I guess. So it should be interesting, and we'll see as the days and weeks go by what it'll matter to the Cardinals. All right, well, let's go ahead then and talk about the last week in the Redbird Rewind.
He got it! Struck him out! Look at the scene on the field. McCarver, the first one. Now his infielders all over him. A new world's record of 17 strikeouts in one game.
Cardinals have played... I guess on the most part, they played some interesting baseball this week. You know, if you go back, they lost, you know, the last game against the Phillies and two games against Pittsburgh. Won the finale of that Pittsburgh series, took that Reds game that was a makeup. Then took two out of three against an Arizona team that's, you know, in the playoffs if they end right now and could have swept them. And then they beat the Nationals tonight. And granted, they faced the back of the rotation of Tanner Roark and got into that... legendarily bad Nationals bullpen early. But on the whole, I mean, this is not quite the same team that we've seen over the last little bit, and maybe providing a little bit of hope.
Yeah, that's, and the laying the two eggs of Pittsburgh was the one that was really frustrating. You're just like, okay, this is probably not going to go anywhere. But then you see, you know, Mo, he shifts some chairs around, you know, brings back Grichuk, and everybody was like, wait a second, this is happening a lot quicker than we thought, and then brings up Voit. And, yeah, he played his cards right. You know, they play well Sunday night, they come back, they bring up Voit, and like I said, you know, like we were talking a little bit earlier in the week, and I put in a post, that was the most exciting hit by a pitch we've seen in years and may have been the most exciting play we've seen from the Cardinals this year. Win that one, you know, get a game out of the series, you're happy with it. I kind of thought you could see a change in just level of play during the Monday game. Now, of course, I'm not so sure how much Cincinnati wanted to be there as bad as they're playing and having the one when it should have been an off day and a travel day and then they had to come to St. Louis to play. So you could always factor that in. But you can just kind of tell that they were a little bit different. And not, you know, that's, you know, Grichuk had homers and back-to-back days. And you're just like, okay, well, now you feel pretty good about it. So, you know, we say they could have swept them. I'll go one step further and say they should have swept Arizona. Mm. You know, if you would have got, all you had to get one out here and there and you'd have been all right. So, and that's a good team and that's a really good lineup. So I took a lot of, I kind of feel like they're changing a little bit. I'm trying not to get too deep into it because we know what they can do. And the one thing you can take from everything is that it's easier to watch, more enthusiasm. And I think that, you know, that has to do with some of the new blood that's in. And that kind of goes right along with what some of us were saying during the call last week, that if they're going to lose, let's do it with the minor league guys. Let's not do it with the big league guys because we know what they can do. so we made these call ups and it's kind of turned things around, and in a bad division, you're right in the middle of it.
Yeah, and that's the kicker there. You know, how long does this last? How much does this work? The Cubs lose again today. I think they're right at 500. The Brewers are going to win, or have won, I guess, but.
The Brewers won, yeah.
Yeah, but they, you know, they're still just, you know, what, 2-3 games over 500. Cardinals sitting at 3.5 games out, I think now. But just a game and a half out of second place with the Cubs losing. You know, it's like, you know, do you want to believe that this team can put something together? Do you supplement this team and hope that they can, you know, win the weak division? Or, you know, do you look at the fact that they're, you know, 3 games under 500 at the beginning of July and realize that's not typically a good team? You know, I think that's why it's very interesting to see with the Cardinals making this change right now, because this is a month that's going to be so delicate, because you could be buying one day, selling the next, and it just be kind of up in the air, all the way up till the last week, just trying to figure out what you should do. You could, you know, quote, sell, to try to improve your team. You know, you could be trading off somebody and hoping that the, you know, it's addition by subtraction, or the people that come in to fill that hole will help push you forward. Kind of like the Yankees last year, they traded Aroldis Chapman and then they went on a winning streak. So I don't know. I mean, it's very difficult to get the feel for what this team really is.
Yeah, I agree. And it's exciting to a point, but then it turns around and it's frustrating mm-hmm. to a point. And, I don't know. After hearing the presser today, though, and hearing some of the radio spots last week by DeWitt and Mozeliak, I don't think, when we talk about it in terms of selling, I think that they're going to say, okay, if we get a call on Lynn, we're going to see what we can get. Mm-hmm. If we get a call on O, we're going to see what we can get. If we can get a call on Rosenthal, it's got to be big, but we're going to see what we can get. But I think that may be the limit of it. I don't think they're going to, I think that anything they do is going to be incrementally aimed at improving. I don't think it's going to be anything bigger than that. All three of them, I include Gersh now, made the comment that this is a roster that can win. And I don't know if they meant long term or if they meant this is a roster that can win this division. Cause I'm convinced that they don't think Chicago's very good. You just kind of, you tell the body language and you tell how they answer their questions. I just don't think they think Chicago's going to hit that spark like everyone thought they were. So they feel like they're right in the middle of it. So it's going to be very interesting to see how they handle this. Because I'm in the camp like you just said. I would love to see what you can get for Lynn. Because I feel like you have Weaver who's ready. And that's somebody that can step in right now. And I don't think he has anything left to prove in Memphis. And, you know, Adam Butler put that out today on the Redbird Daily. His post today was basically the same thing. Echoed the sentiments. They're like, hey, he didn't have anything else to prove. We think it's going to be Waka, but, you know, it could be Lynn if they can go get somebody. So you get a controllable bat out of that deal, and you can be better now and 2018, which I think is going to be one of the things they look for. They're going to look for control. Mm-hmm. But, you know, everything's on the table right now. I'm not so sure that they're not going to pull something completely out of their hat to improve. But I feel like they're going to be in the middle of whatever's happening, and I don't think it's going to be a sell.
Yeah, I mean, it's not, and it never was going to be a tear down to the foundation type of sale. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was always going to be a limited sale anyway. Kind of limited to, you know, the guys that are going to be free agents that you don't plan on bringing back. And if somebody called on Leak, if somebody called on Jerko and offered you the right deal, then you take it, to restock maybe a little bit in the minor leagues. And I think that's one of those things. It's like, there's not very many chances for the Cardinals to be quote sellers at a deadline and be able to maybe bring in a highly regarded prospect, with their players. I mean, cause they're usually buying instead of selling. But on the flip side of that, you know, the way that Lance Lynn, the way Sung Won Oh, the way that Trevor Rosenthal even is pitching right now, it seems unlikely you're going to get that top prospect. Even for a team that might need them, need something desperately, they're not showing that right now. So, you know, it could argue that it's worth standing pat. It's, you know, what's why, you know, see if they can improve in the second half and, you know, just ride them out. I don't know. But not getting a feel. Now, I think this team seems to be significantly better because Tommy Pham has kind of taken over whatever this team needed. He seems to have given them the kick in the pants that they need. I know Tara Wellman talked about it on Birdseed this week. But it's kind of that leadership that I don't know that we've seen a lot of. Because I think Tommy, I know you and I have talked about, you know, how he's received in the clubhouse and things of that nature. But it feels like Tommy's got that, not to the extent that Chris Carpenter or John Lackey or anybody had, but he's still got that edge, that ability to, you know, take no prisoners, if you will. He's going to, you know, speak his mind. He's going to, you know, maybe get on somebody if he needs to. And that's just not something we've seen a lot of.
No, that's, yeah, we've talked about that a lot. And it's one of those where I was afraid that they needed his voice, but the veterans weren't going to let that happen. Mm-hmm. That it was going to be, you're going to get ran out of town before. But you know, even when I was kind of pointing some of that stuff out to you yesterday, then I saw the welcoming line in the dugout and I completely changed my opinion. Cause you could tell that they were really fired up after he got that hit yesterday. And you know, there's a lot of handshaking and everything going on, and there was tonight too. So I don't know, maybe there's buying in. And that's another factor to where the one thing they haven't been this past week is stale. Mm-hmm. in a good way and a bad way. You know, by blowing the lead and, you know, Rosenthal making it interesting on Wednesday. And that's all I've asked for. You know, make it fun to watch again. So I don't know if that's what he brings, I'm all about him staying right in the middle of things.
Yeah, I mean, it just feels like he's got an energy. And then you're right. Seeing some of these guys come up from the minor leagues and provide that spark. I mean, we talked about it earlier in the year. We talked about it when Magnera Sierra came up and how he provided a spark that, you know, nobody wanted to see him leave the team because he gave a spark to people. We've seen that a little bit with Luke Voit. If nothing else, he got the crowd behind him there in his first game.
Mm-hmm.
Being the hometown boy. We've seen Paul DeJong play exceptionally well with his bat, hitting another home run tonight. And he's going to obviously be playing shortstop for quite some time now that Diaz is in Memphis. These guys are giving the little bit of a spark that this team seems to have needed. And I'm still not necessarily convinced that we're going to see a real run, but you know, if they can win two out of three this weekend, and they've taken one, you've got Miami and the Mets coming in before the All-Star break. Those are two teams that are having their own issues, teams that a resurgent Cardinal team could beat. I mean, if you could get on a bit of a run going into the All-Star break, I don't know. And maybe you do. Maybe that encourages Gersh to go out and make a deal for a bat. Again, I think that they're going to go out and get somebody that's controllable, like you said, somebody that they're not doing a rental, but maybe that gives them a little bit more excitement to go out and get a guy that's going to be there for 2 or 3 years that they think can be an impact. I don't know, but I think there's a little bit more optimism this week than there has been in a while. And like you said, it's partly because even when they lose, it's not a three-hit game out of the offense. And they're, you know, they get beat by 7 runs and they're down by 2 early and you just feel like it's over. They've shown some fight. They've shown some, you know, Grichuk has provided some power. And it's just a different look. Even when they do lose, it's a different look than what we've been seeing.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, if you can win this one this weekend, you know, my biggest fear is that they're going to win the series this weekend and then they're going to play really well next week. Then you're going to the break and it's going to completely ruin it. You know, then they're going to come back and it's going to be the same old team. That's my biggest fear. If you win this weekend, if you can beat them, I think it's kind of maybe a situation to look out. I mean, they may really be in the thick of this now to where, you know, we were going to be in the periphery and we thought that Chicago was going to run away with it, but all signs are pointing towards, you win a few games, you win a few of these big series against teams that, you know, have made all season have looked better than you have. Mm-hmm. Well, then this could get pretty interesting. And then that 85-86 win mark is pretty attainable, and it can win the division. So yeah, there's always skepticism. I mean, they'll prove me wrong next week after being so enthused. But, you know, I just keep saying the National League is not very good. And I think you can get in the middle of it. You can get right in the middle of a race. You get in a race and then you sneak into the playoffs. You've got Carlos Martinez, and a lot of teams have won it with less than that. So all hope is not lost, but, you know, let's keep our fingers crossed.
Yeah, you're right. I guess the worst case scenario really is that they, you know, go out and make a trade to improve this team, and then they get bad. You know, that they kind of fall prey to this, whatever this little run is here, and it turns out to not be anything of accuracy. But, you know, I think this is the first time we've seen this team beat good teams. That, you know, they took should have swept Arizona, because, I mean, they had it, you know, when you give it to Rosenthal at O, you should win, although that's not been the case as much this year as you'd like to think. You know, did win the other two. Beat the Nationals here. If you win two out of three against the Nationals, you've beaten two good teams, and really they haven't done that. They've not done that back-to-back in a long time. You know, that big run that the Cardinals had earlier in the year was kind of based on teams like Miami and others that were struggling. And once they, you know, the schedule got a little tougher, you know, the record kind of plummeted again. So, you know, it could be that you just caught them at a bad time, Arizona or whatever, but it may be that this team really is playing better. So, I think tomorrow's the big game, just to watch, because you got Michael Wacha going up against Gio Gonzalez, and I know Gonzalez, I think the Cardinals beat up on him, earlier in the year, but, you know, we don't know what we're going to get out of Michael Wacha. We may talk about that a little bit here in a minute. The Sunday night game is Carlos Martinez versus Max Scherzer, which is going to be one of those games where if there's four hits total, it may be a surprise. But you can't expect, as much as you know, you like to say, oh, Carlos Martinez is going, the Cardinals are going to win, you can't expect to beat Max Scherzer.
No.
You might be able to, but you can't expect to. So the Cardinals really need to win tomorrow, and then not worry about that, and you'll have the series won. But yeah, I think that's the biggest thing, is just seeing them play against better teams. It may give them that run. It feels a little bit different than it did before the shakeup, at least.
Yeah, I couldn't say it better. That's how you just kind of feel. They're just different. It's just a different feeling, a different look. You know, I know there's not a lot of different players, but it's just a little bit different. And you know, I don't know if we plan to get on this a little bit later, but you know, I think that the middle infield right now is seems they're down a player, even with guys that fill spots. You know, I know that he had two hits tonight, but, you know, Garcia gets exposed pretty easy. I'm not so sure, you know, Mejia, just like Kyle put out earlier this week that, you know, he's a good defender, but, you know, he's just gap power. You know, that's about all we'll get. And I kind of thought he looked overmatched in Arizona. So it seems like whenever Wong gets back and maybe switches spots with Mejia, then you add another piece to that, and then, you know, you kind of wait for Fowler. My biggest concern with the Wong deal is he had the compression brace on there today, and I understand that we're looking at 2 weeks before he comes back, but I'm not so sure this isn't worse than what we're being told. And, you know, I hope that's something that doesn't halt momentum, that we're just waiting and waiting and waiting for him to come back and it never happens. You know, with that being said, going back to tomorrow's game, I fully expect to see Carpenter at second tomorrow and Boyd at first. And that'll be interesting just to get him a start in the four or five bats with Carpenter in the lineup. So it looks like they're showing a little bit of flexibility on that, and that'll be exciting to watch too.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, and it is funny, as somebody has pointed out on Twitter, that all of a sudden the Cardinals are very flexible with Matt Carpenter. But they weren't that flexible with Matt Carpenter when they had Matt Adams, who had gone off to Atlanta and hit a lot of home runs and done fairly well for himself. You know, and I don't know. I don't know if that's a directive toward Matheny. I don't know if that's a a realization from everybody involved that maybe we made a mistake here, or if it's just born out of desperation of the fact that, look, we've been bad, we've got to do something, and you know, we've got this guy up here, he needs to play. I don't know what the deal is, but it is interesting to see this kind of turnabout toward Matt Carpenter and where he can play, because we've seen him play. He played a couple games, I guess, at third earlier in the season, but that's about it. But you're right. He was taking balls at second base. And I also think you're right on Wong. I mean, we've heard Al say on the broadcast, I know he did tonight, and I think he had the night before, that, you know, there had been talk about Colton Wong being activated for this National Series at one time.
Yeah.
And now it's, it's going to be 2 weeks. It's going to be the All-Star break. I do think that's a concern. I, without hearing any more details, it feels like that's a significant thing. And it feels like, I mean, we'll see when he goes out, but he's going to be out long enough. He's going to have to go have a rehab assignment. You know, maybe he's going to take that during the All-Star break if the minor leagues are playing and be ready to go for the second half. I don't know, but, I mean, that is concerning when a guy that, you know, all of a sudden, That timetable gets pushed back, and we really don't know why.
Yeah, Jim Hayes interviewed him during the Pittsburgh series, and Wong said he would be back when they came back from Arizona. So I was looking forward to it. And then, you know, Gould kind of slipped that in that they were looking at after the All-Star break. And I thought, well, that kind of stinks. I said, because I feel like they're a man down in the infield right now. Mm-hmm. And then when they showed him tonight, he was in that brace, and I thought, you know, it sounds just a little fishy about this. I just hope it's not that in the situation where it's day to day, we're hearing something, and, you know, next thing you know, he doesn't start down in Memphis for a month and gets shut down, and, you know, we've lost half the season waiting on him to come back, you know, because we've seen that happen. So that's concerning to me. I also wonder about Fowler's heel. And that could be tough. So I don't know. It could be interesting in several areas here in the next, 2 to 3 weeks.
Yeah, I feel like, and I may be wrong, I don't know, but you know, we were, again, referring back to Blogger Day where somebody asked, Mo, you know, about Carson Kelly and why he didn't come up. And basically Mo said, if I had known Molina was going to be out all weekend, we would have. But, you know, I was told day to day. I'm wondering if he doesn't get better information when a player is on the disabled list, because he's talking to the trainers, he's talking to the people doing his rehab, and it's less directly through the staff. You know what I'm saying? The staff may have optimistic ideas of it being, oh, he's just out for a day. You know, and so if it is going to be a long-term thing, it may not affect the plans of the front office, because they may know. They may say, we're going to assume that Colton Wong is out till, you know, August or whatever, and we're going to go get a second baseman or whatever it may be. I don't think that the plans are quite as, waiting on Colton that way like they would be if he was sitting there hurt. And, you know, is he going to play this day? Is he going to play that day? You know, that kind of stuff. Now, Dexter Fowler's heel may be a little bit closer to that because he's on the today, but, you know, there's still that idea of when's he going to be available. And we haven't heard anything from Fowler since he went on the DL. What was that, earlier this week, I guess? We haven't heard anything since it happened. So, I mean, that's going to be something to watch, too. And then, of course, when he comes back, it's going to be something to watch, because then you have Tommy Pham and Randall Grichuk and Stephen Piscotty, and how do you work all that together? You know, Scotty can play first, but, and maybe that's what happens. Maybe Cole, you know, he plays first a lot and Carpenter shifts to second while Wong's gone. I don't know, but there's a lot of things that are going to have to come up if people get healthy. But we just have to wait and see what the results are on some of these tests and when we start seeing them talk about getting into shape. But it is a little disconcerting to see Wong push back.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I hate the lingering injuries more than anything. So, and I don't, and you're right. I don't think that's necessarily going to change the impact that they have, you know, at the deadline, but it certainly doesn't help, you know, because I feel like they're playing well, but they miss him. And, you know, yeah, I probably wouldn't have said that before the season, but yeah, I mean, he makes them a better team. on both sides of the ball. So, you know, I just hope something gets cleared up sooner rather than later.
All right, well, let's talk a little bit. Let's go ahead and we'll shift it. We'll make this the our major segment up the middle.
Alisaev, the second for Webb, the double play. What a double play by Ozzie Smith. Oh, mercy.
And let's talk a little bit about what we've seen this week, but in more in specific, and let's talk about the pitching. And let's first talk about the bullpen. Sung Won Oh, again, struggled, gave up the game at Arizona, as we've talked about, although he had some help. Like I said, I put out on Twitter, Cardinals were up 5-4 in the eighth, and I went to bed pretty much assured that they weren't going to win, because it just felt that way. I mean, because they had a 5-2 lead, Rosenthal makes it to one run, and it feels like more often than not, and it's probably not, it's probably actually more like half and half, but still, that's a lot. Sung Won Oh gives up a run. You know, whether it's a run to win the game, whether it's a run to, you know, just cut the lead a little bit, whatever. So if you give him a one run lead and he's going to give up a run, there you go. And that's exactly what he did. The next day, Rosenthal gets the setup. Matheny talks about shifting up, you know, roles. That said, Rosenthal gave up a run and made it, you know, a lot more interesting than it should have been. So I'm not sure that this transition, if that's what they're going to do, if they're actually flipping these guys, I'm not sure that's going to solve anything.
In a struggle situation, I would much rather have Rosenthal in the ninth than O, just because Rosenthal has the strikeout stuff.
Sure.
So like when you and I were talking about this week, and we kind of went back and forth about, well, maybe the roles changing wouldn't help. But I don't know. I think that Rosenthal just better fits that situation of closing out games. And I think Cecil needs some less high leverage, if I said that right, situations. And the thing that may have, it's so strange to make this comment, but you know, they blew one game and tried to blow two, but the bullpen made me feel pretty good about it. Just about things moving forward, that's one of the reasons of optimism, is how good Cecil's been. And that, I know that those two, that switching up that eighth and ninth inning role is going to be kind of tedious, and it's curious how Matheny's going to handle it, because I don't think he's ever going to name either one of them, because he doesn't want to embarrass, you know how I feel about that. They just don't want to do that. Right. That's when they hold on too long. But Cecil has been effective and has been really good. So, if we can get that figured out at the end of the game, which I hope is Rosenthal, it's what I've been pushing for all year, then I think it's kind of getting back to where we thought it was going to be really good. And I fully expect that to be one of the areas where they do add somebody. Mm-hmm. So now whether that's an Addison Reed, whether that's a Neshek or somebody like that, to where somebody that has closing experience, but somebody can get that big out in the seventh as well. I think that's one of the people they add. And that's one of those that it would not surprise me if they do get a rental in that situation.
Right.
You know, wanted to grab from one of those teams that is not asking for much, you know, to get one of those guys. That's why I figured that will probably happen. You know, I know that we can't say this necessarily anymore, but Jose like always makes a bullpen deal, no matter where they are. He always adds some way every year he's done it to the bullpen. And I don't think this year will be any different.
Well, and it is interesting, as Rob Raines tweeted out, that Zach Duke was on the mound tonight for the GCL Cardinals and pitched an inning. And there is that, you know, there was a talk, even at the time, I don't think it was highly talked about, but there was that idea at the time that, you know, he had the surgery very early, kind of like Lance Lynn did. And we know that Lance Lynn got close to coming back last year. As a reliever, you know, Duke doesn't have to do as much because he doesn't have to build up stamina. He just has to be able to, you know, pitch an inning or so. So, you know, maybe Duke's that, you know, little bit of a boost, although he's probably going to be, you know, just a specialist if he does come up. But I agree. I think that, you know, Cecil is definitely proving that this is why they went and got him. He pitches better in the summer anyway. And as I wrote one of my posts today, you know, he's gone like 10 innings without giving up a run. And he's given a batters are hitting 097 against him over that span. I mean, he definitely has turned a corner. Perhaps it was just a hair. It seems to be the big thing. You know, you get the haircut, you do a lot better. So he's done well since they've shaved his head. But I think that you're right on Rosenthal, and I know that Bernie Mikulas wrote the same type of thing, that he'd rather have Rosenthal and his ability to strike people out in the ninth inning. And I get that. The only problem with Rosenthal is, and it's, I think it's more so than, oh, although I'd have to look at the numbers to see. It just feels like when Rosenthal's wild, he's wild. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, you come in, like he saw him, you know, he threw, you know, walked two guys and threw a wild pitch in that, say, in the save that he got in Arizona. And had runners at second and third with, I think, one out, definitely with two outs, before getting the last batter or two. You know, he could finally shaped up and struck a guy out and got a ground out, I think. Yeah, having the 100 mile per hour stuff helps you get out of things for sure. But, you know, if you can't control it, I don't know what's more frustrating way to lose a game. I don't know if it's more frustrating to lose on a home run, you know, like a solo home run that ties it or wins it, or if it's, you know, walking two guys and then they, you know, wind up scoring on a base hit. I don't know. I mean, both are very frustrating, don't get me wrong, but I feel like, you know, if you give up a home run, you can say the guy hit a good pitch. But if you're walking guys, you're just, you know, kind of handing the game to them. So I don't know. I think that that's what we'll see for a while. But, you know, with the way that, you know, Rosenthal was pitching very well in April and May, but June has not been that kind to him, overall, somewhat skewed by the really bad outing he had in Milwaukee where he gave up three runs and didn't give it out. but, yeah, you know, that'll skew anybody's numbers. But, you know, I don't know. I don't know that I'm completely sold on him out there. Maybe as much as anybody else, but I think that's the problem. You know, and I guess the kicker is, you know, if O leaves this year, are you sure that Rosenthal's going to be your closer? And if not, do you look for a closer? I don't know what kind of closers would be on the market, but, you know, if you could get a guy that's had closing experience or a guy that can shut things down in the ninth, you know, and bump Rosenthal and O back into the middle of the bullpen, maybe that's what you do.
Yeah, that's, you know, they didn't, I feel like that the club is kind of in line with what you're thinking there. There wouldn't have been talk of him, you know, starting or being the super reliever if, they were completely confident in his ability to close games. They also, I'm not so sure that Rosenthal being the organization after, you know, after next year anyway, just because of, you know, his representation and what he's going to, what he's going to ask. Mm-hmm. So I'm anti pay big for a closer anyway. Rosenthal's one of those guys that, you know, I've got the emotional investment in him. If they were to re-sign him, I'd probably be happy that they did it. But I don't want them going out and signing a closer. I always feel like you can find one or piece together that bullpen to do it. That's one thing that I'm pretty confident in with them. Mozeliak won't let the bullpen be what keeps them out. You know, he'll shift around and he'll make daily moves on that if he has to. And I expect them to go get a veteran to go back there instead of just all the Memphis guys. And, that will be interesting to watch. I'm confident that, you know, Rizzo kind of has to wait out what he can, kind of find out what he can, because the market's probably just not coming to them. Because out of desperation, anybody can get anybody from, you know, out of their organization right now. So I don't think Mozeliak would let that happen. I think that would be one of the first things that he fixes. So it's way down my list. You know, ask me in 2 weeks when they blow five or six leads and it may sound differently, but that's just kind of how I feel about that.
Yeah, and I guess we'll transition here. I guess blowing those leads would be less frustrating somewhat if you were getting consistently good starting pitching and you knew that those starters were going to give you another good game until the next day. But there are times, I mean, we saw good outings this week from Adam Wainwright, even on the road, and we saw a pretty good outing from Michael Wacha, although it was against the Reds. Those kind of games, I say them mainly. I mean, we saw an okay game out of Lynn. Obviously saw a very good game out of Mike Leake tonight. But Leake's been pitching well enough. But I think especially with Wainwright and, with Wacha, you can't afford to waste their good starts because they're not coming around all that often.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's I try to stay optimistic. My optimism runs start by start basically anymore, you know, because we were all down on Walker last week to like, hey, this may be his last chance, and then he was really good. So, and then that goes back into, it's still a big league lineup, and the Cincinnati lineup's pretty good, but it's still, you wonder how quick that they were ready to get those innings over so they can get on the plane and head to Cincinnati, you know, and there's doing what was, should have been an off day. So you really can't tell too much. So they have reinforcements ready. I'm ready to see how they start handling this. Now whether they give, I don't know what kind of leash that Walk is on. It doesn't seem to be super short. You know, when you hear the organization talk about it, because then they'll start piggybacking he and Lyons. So I don't know. That was a reason for optimism for me this week. I mean, I thought Lynn gave up a lot of hard contact. And like I said, you and I were talking about that early in the game. Then he settled down and kept a minute. And that's what you ask. So I don't know. I hope that if the pitching comes back to what we thought or what we saw in April and May, well then that's another reason to think that, hey, you can contend.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you can get a good solid starting rotation, you can tear up this division. I mean, there's just no doubt about it. I mean, cause a good solid starting rotation gives you a solid chance of winning four in a row, winning 7 of 8, winning, you know, 10 of 13 or something like that. And that's, you know, in this division where, you know, you got trouble, you got one team over 500, you know, a run like that could really get you in it or put you ahead. So getting that is the key. I think Michael Walker's game against the Reds, you're right, the Reds were down 3-0 very early, in a makeup game. You know, you have to think about some of that motivation. Billy Hamilton wasn't in the lineup. You know, but it hasn't mattered against Michael Walker. I mean, Michael Walker's been giving up a lot of solid contact to just about anybody. So, you know, for him to get through a game like that is something. I don't know how much, but it's something. And it's probably, I mean, in all honesty, probably earned him a spot in the rotation at least through the All-Star game. Because there's only, you know, he'll pitch tomorrow night, and then probably probably two more times after that before the break. It seems unlikely that they would make a move with him before that unless he just looks terrible. And so it'll be fun interesting to see, because if Walker can, and I don't think anybody expects Walker to be this dominant force that we saw maybe even earlier in the year, but if he can give you a quality start regularly, you know, get into the sixth inning, because that's been, I mean, he hasn't been able to get out past the fourth much.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you can get him into the sixth and giving up three runs, I think you take a lot of that. And the way the offense is playing of late, because I feel like the offense ever since that press conference, I mean, you look at it and the runs per game are way up. It feels like the offense is, you know, and whether that's because Carpenter's leading off and whatever, I don't know. But it just feels like the offense has clicked a lot more. And you don't find too many of those, you know, games where they're getting shut out or just scoring one run. Quality start, you can win. And so we'll see if that happens. And Adam Wainwright, I still don't know. I was very surprised to see him pitch well in a ballpark that is conducive to offense. I think from what I was gathering from Twitter, and I didn't really notice it as much when I was watching it, but that the strike zone was pretty wide, and he got some benefit there. I don't know. I still can't. I don't know that I can still trust Adam Wainwright, but if, again, he's kind of one of those things that gets, you know, if he can pitch you 3 out of 5 of those games are good games, maybe you just deal with a couple of stinkers and you go on.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, and he's earned the right for that, mm-hmm. you know, everything that he's done. I feel like what made me nervous is when Lynn and Wainwright, when the wheels start coming off of them a little bit, because I felt like they've had a contingency plan for Walker all along. Mm-hmm. You know, you get to the break and then you're maybe on borrowed time after that, you know, and then that's maybe when you see a Weaver or a Gant or maybe, you know, a Marco at that point. But, the reason I didn't bring up Flaherty is I had heard that they're going to hold that off, that they're going to try not to promote him this year. Kind of what, like, I think they felt like they rushed Weaver a little bit. But to me, I thought Weaver's appearances last year probably helped him this year more than anything. But, you know, Kyle and those guys can probably tell you more on that. But that's what kind of concerned me is, if more than half of your rotation is going to struggle, well, then you might as well just go ahead and overhaul the whole rotation and bring everybody up. But they've seemed to all three of them have seemed to pitch better. And that situation with Waka, I just feel like they're ready for that to fall apart if it does, with the shoulder issue. I saw somewhere where, and it may have even been Zach Gifford that posted this, but, I guess Wainwright he threw a ton of sinkers and it kind of changed everything for Arizona and it worked. Right. And you're just wondering if he's not reinventing himself every start. And that's admirable to me. So, you look pretty good if you have that and you can have Lynn be Lance Lynn. You know, cut down on the home runs a little bit, but I think you'll be all right. Lynn's lack of velocity kind of makes me nervous, but that's still just two guys instead of three. And I feel like you can fill those holes. And like you and I both, I don't know if we're convinced Lynn's going to be here, you know, that much longer. Mm. So that may be a spot that they fill anyway. So yeah, as we talking, I'm high on the rotation, but you can see where it could fall apart. I'm going to steal your line. The margin of error is very low. You know, if it falls apart, it's going to be trouble.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem. That's the worrisome part for me, I think, of this whole situation, is that the Cardinals are going to hang around and they're going to play well enough that, you know, the front office either stands pat or adds somebody, and then August is going to come around and things are just going to, you know, that margin of error is going to go away.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you can, you know, when you get into August, especially in the pitching staff, you can mix and match, like you said, with Weaver, Gonzalez, you know, bring people up, find a reason to DL people, whatever. But it just feels like it's so tentative right now. And that's why, you know, for the most part, I've been kind of advocating just go ahead and ignore the fact that they're close and focus on the fact that they're under 500. Because it, you know, on the whole, if you took the season overall to this point, it hasn't been a good team. But, you know, that last little bit of this week is given a little bit of optimism, and you can at least believe that this team is different now and they're going to play better. You know, I don't know if they will, but you at least could sell yourself on that a little bit more when you see the effort that they're seeing out there and the results that we're seeing out of just about everybody. So I don't know. I feel like I'm hopeful that what we're seeing now is real, and it will be able to be continued. But it's very, I think we've just been burned a lot this year because,
sure,
you know, every time you start to think something's going well, then, you know, they go 3-13 or whatever.
Yeah, my enthusiasm masks my skepticism on a lot of, you know what I mean, on a lot of this. So, one, just like I said in the podcast last week, I just don't want it to ruin summer. You know what I mean? Let's stay in this as long as we can, however we do it, and make it entertaining and just see where we come out in the wash.
Yeah. I mean, we want to have fun watching ball games. You know, obviously it's more fun when they win, but even if they're going to lose, play some entertaining ball. And like I said, and I feel that that's what Tommy Pham is bringing to this team, is, you know, a little bit of a fire, a little bit of interest. And, we'll see if he can stay healthy, and we can see what happens when Dexter Fowler gets healthy. I feel like the team and Matheny and all them are coming around a little bit more on Tommy Pham. So that I know a lot of people will say, well, as soon as, you know, with Grichuk up, as soon as Fowler's back, then, Pham's going to the bench. I don't think so. I mean, I think Mike Matheny's been pretty adamant about the fact that Tommy Pham is one of the best players out there right now. And while they may get a day or two here and there as they rotate, I think Tommy Pham's going to play a lot. Unless he plays his way into trade. I mean, that's always
sure.
Really too, what we talked about.
Yeah.
So. All right. Well, unless you've got anything more about this team you want to talk about, you know, in the pitching staff especially. I think we'll transition over to Kyle's part. What do you think?
Let's do it.
All right. Well, then let's go to our minors report.
0-1 to Pujols. In the air, left field, and Pujols has given St. Louis the lead. A dramatic, towering three-run home run. Stunned in disbelief here in Houston.
And we're here with Kyle Reese from Redbird Daily in our weekly talk about the minors. Kyle, it's good to talk to you again.
Nice to talk to you too, Daniel. I look forward to these little talks.
It's a lot of fun, and I now know much more about the minors than I probably did at the beginning of the year. So that's awesome. It's good for me. Let's talk about let's just kick this off with the newest, well, I guess the two newest since we've talked last, people to make it up to the big leagues from Memphis. That would be Luke Voit and Alex Mejia. I know we've talked a little bit about Voit before, but just as a little bit of a recap, what are we going to see out of him, do you think, over the next, well, however long he's here?
You know, the two things that have really stuck out so far that have translated fantastically from his game at Memphis and Springfield and his entire tenure of what I've known about him as a baseball player is he is having a blast, and he's always been known as an energy guy, kind of a goofy guy in the clubhouse. But you can expect a lot of energy from him, which might not be traditional for a big boy like him. I mean, most of the time you use the word energy when you're talking about someone small, mm-hmm. at least in baseball. The energy, you're going to see that. And you're also going to see a discipline maybe that you might not see from a guy getting his first taste in the major leagues. He's ready. He's totally prepared. You know, you and I had a conversation a couple weeks back where it was right as he started struggling, and we were trying to get into his mind a little bit, what he might have been feeling as Huffman got called up before him and what might have been going on there. But he seems unflappable, and he loves playing the game. And I think you're going to see him get, you know, not enough of an opportunity, which I'm kind of heartbroken about. I think today would have been a great day to get him in the starting rotation, or in the starting lineup, I mean, but I think he'll do everything he can to seize every opportunity that's placed in front of him. And, you know, I hope he gets a couple starts in there, and I hope the team's willing to be a little flexible with Matt Carpenter's positioning so that he can really shine, because I really do believe that he's ready to shine. You know, one thing that he did, he took a double to the right center field gap. And he doesn't do that a lot. He's been doing it a lot more this year, but I bring that up because that's the kind of hitter, that's the kind of adjustments he's made to up his game in Memphis this year. That's why his numbers are skyrocketed. He's hitting for power, he's hitting the gaps. So that's him, you can expect that. And Mejia with Alex, you can expect a true professional. You can expect great defense. You know, I guess the easy comp is Tyler Green. In my write-up for the Redbird Daily, I think he's a lot like Joe McEwing, like offensive profile-wise, but a better defender. This is a kid who was a Pac-12 player of the year, Pac-12 defensive player of the year. He started all 3 years as a freshman, as a true freshman at Arizona State. He's had constant injury problems. He's reworked his swing a little bit to engineer his swing for the gaps this year. But he really is just like a perfect little utility man who you might be able to maximize if that swing that he's engineered for the gaps manifests at the major league level. I don't know if it will. I know he's had a couple rough at bats and, you know, his small taste here to start his career. But I think if he relaxes a little bit, try to remember that he is playing in Arizona right now. His first two games in the major leagues are in Arizona. I can only imagine how emotional that is for him. I mean, that's every bit as emotional for him, in the area he grew up in for the most part, with some tough family situation. It's every bit as emotional as what Luke Voit has been able to go through, but with like out the celebration there, without the celebration around it. So, he's a really solid player who might only be up here for anywhere from one more day to 50 more days. We might not ever see him again after he gets sent down, but he's a really interesting guy that I think fans will like, if for no other reason than he's hustling defense first.
Yeah, it's interesting when you were talking about Luke Voit, and I kind of the fan favorites, because obviously he's already done that, being a St. Louis boy, and you know everybody's screaming Luke at him and all that kind of stuff. It feels like so often those fan favorites are the scrappy, high energy guys like Joe McEwing, like Bo Hart, that are flashes in the pan. But that doesn't seem to be the case for him. At least, you know, I don't know about flash in the pan. We'll have to wait and see on that, obviously. But he's obviously got a different profile than that kind of person usually is. It's actually usually more like Mejia would be that kind of guy. They've kind of switched in the fan appreciation, I guess, somewhat.
Yeah, and you're dead on. And that goes to show you, like, what kind of effect a guy like Luke Voit can have in a clubhouse. You know, you feed off of that energy, and the energy only goes so far when the production isn't following the energy. Mm-hmm. And if you've got a big man who can hammer some home runs, hit dingers and doubles, which is the greatest catchphrase in the history of my life. Like, that is the best thing I've ever heard. But a guy whose game is designed for that, with that energy, I don't think there's any coincidence that this team's winning a little bit because of that. I really think that that's the kind of fresh air that this clubhouse needed. And who knows how long it'll last. You know, it might not last very long, but yeah, you're dead on. He's a total fan favorite, and he earns the praise.
Now, with all this, all the movement and stuff, we had some other movement in the minor leagues, and that was Adolis Garcia moving up from Springfield to Memphis. As you indicate, I mean, we've talked a little bit about it before, but the outfield situation for the Cardinals, it gets kind of messy here pretty soon. There's a lot of them already in the big leagues and a lot more coming. You know, how deep are they out there?
It's so deep. And it was deep entering the season, and it's even richer now than I think even I anticipated. And I've always been a big Randy Arozarena guy, mm-hmm. More so than most. I, as we entered the season, I wrote about some draft busts, in the Mozeliak era. And the one guy that I highlighted in there at the end that was still too early to call him a bust was Oscar Mercado. And I prefaced that with saying that he was hitting at the time when he got changed to a center fielder, when he became a center fielder last season. He ended up hitting like 260, and getting on base like a 330 clip, which was like 40%. Percentage points higher than what he was career. And I said, keep an eye on this. This is going to be something worth watching. Well, he's taken his game to a different level. He's a Texas League All-Star. He's stealing bases. He's probably the most legitimate stolen base threat in the minor leagues for the Cardinals. He's come a long way defensively. But yeah, this is, there's two guys at the top level, the two top levels with Bader and Garcia at Memphis now, and, with Sierra and Mercado in Springfield. And, you know, like I said, you go down to Arozarena in Palm Beach, along with what is a logjam at the major league level once Fowler gets healthy. And any move that the Cardinals make, if they make a move to strengthen the team at the major league level, it has to be one of the outfielders. Harrison Bader has been incredible. Of his 79 hits this year, 29 are extra base hits. He's really come a long way, in the outfield. You know, he's a worker. I have not been as high on his defense as maybe some other people because he hadn't earned it, but this offseason, he took every step to become a legitimate center fielder. He doesn't have the arm that you would hope for from a center fielder. His arm is just like a click above John Jay's. But he can run around out there. Like he's actually really comparable to John Jay as a center fielder. And he made just a highlight catch over the wall in Memphis last night that you're just not going to see a lot of guys make. So anyways, as I ramble, yes, that the outfield is incredible. I don't know what to think. I don't know what's going to happen. We were talking on Twitter tonight with some people who follow me on Twitter and who I talk with regularly on Twitter about what the roster might look like in 2020 with the outfield. And I mean, they're at a position where they could trade three guys and three outfielders and not necessarily hurt themselves. So that's awesome. That's something worth getting excited about in my book.
Yeah, it's very interesting because there have been times where it felt like the outfield was a weakness. And they've been able to strengthen that up significantly. You're right. It'd be interesting to see how Mo cashes that in if he does, at the trade deadline.
Yeah. And on top of that, real fast, one last thought is, Jose Adolis Garcia Jag, he can play center field, and Bader can play center field, and Mercado can play center field, and Sierra is a center fielder, and Rosarena can play center. You know, they've got five guys just in the minor league level who can play all three positions and do them well.
Yeah, and then like you said, you've got, you know, Fowler playing center field in the major leagues, and Pham that can, and Grichuk that can. So
yeah,
you know, there's a lot of. We should not have to see Colton Wong in the outfield anymore. Let's
put it down. Oh God, poor Colton.
Let's talk a little bit about the pitching, because that's always been a strength of the Cardinals as well. As you were talking earlier, Marco Gonzalez and Austin Gomber both had some pretty good starts this week. We saw a rough start out of Gonzalez, of course, in the major leagues about a week or so ago. Is that going to hold him back from getting another shot, do you think?
No, I don't think so at all. I think the only thing that stops Marco Gonzalez from making another appearance, whether it be in the bullpen or, you know, having a start with the Cardinals, is if he gets traded. You know, again, I have no idea what direction Mo is going to go in. I can only imagine what's hitting through his head right now. But no, you know, I would assume that if the Cardinals needed another starter, I mean, Luke Weaver's healthy now and he's pitching great as well. He had another great start last night. This team seems to kind of prefer Marco. I don't know what the reasoning behind it is. Maybe it's just because he has major league success, at least, where Luke has faltered in his little pace. But maybe they're trying to showcase Marco. I don't know. But yeah, I would assume that if they need a long guy for the patron pitcher, if Mr. Lyons, if his role changes, which it has with Myers getting up, but you know, no telling how long Myers is going to be in the bullpen with his continued failure out there. But yeah, I would assume Marco gets a shot in the near future back at the major league level in some capacity. I'm anxious to see what Michael Wacha does this weekend. I think that's gonna. We'll see some pretty serious dominoes fall if Wacha gets beat around in Washington. And, yeah, you know, and then you mentioned, at Springfield tonight, Austin Gomber, who had a groin injury early in the year, who got off to a terrible start at Springfield and then had the groin injury. He's three or four starts, removed from coming off the DL with a groin injury. And he has been lights out in his last two starts. He's back to showing the flashes of dominance that he showed last year and the year before at Peoria and Palm Beach, and the little taste he got at Springfield last year. He's mixing his curveball in. He's ironed out one of his pitching mechanics. He had a little like a delay, but the delay has turned into a hitch, so it doesn't like throw off his timing a little bit, and I think that's really, really helping him. But yeah, it's been a good week as always. You know, as often as what we just talked about with the depth in the outfield, the depth and the starting pitching is just as good. And, everyone is, especially at the upper levels, is performing exactly how you hope.
Yeah. I want to go back a little bit to Myers, cause we did see him pitch again today and struggle, home run, double, kind of got a little bit out of, almost gave up another home run. Is he a quad A guy, or is we just not? I know that the Cardinals seem to still have some hope for him, but he just seems like he hasn't shown it at all.
Yeah, you know, that breaks my heart too. I think at this point you have to say he is definitely a quad A guy. He definitely has done nothing to prove otherwise. Mm-hmm. Especially right now, because he was pitching so great at Memphis, and it looked that part too. You know, I watched his last two starts at Memphis, and he wasn't nibbling, and he wasn't, everything was coming out of the same slot. It looked good. And I thought, all right, this guy will be perfect for the pen. I didn't get to see all of his appearance tonight. I only got to see part of it, but he looks overwhelmed. The picture quality for when you watch MILB TV is not great. So you can't really read in reactions as well. But he seems overwhelmed. It looks like he tries to nibble too much. I don't know if that's a philosophy, but yes, as of right now, that Mr. Myers is very much a quad A, a 4A guy.
Yeah, and that is a problem because, you know, the Cardinals don't typically have 8-9 run leads to let him go out there and pitch it and try to get his feet under him. So that's going to be interesting to see, because that was a little surprising for him to come up. You're working on your weekly list, getting that ready for Redbird Daily. Any surprises or any teasers you want to throw out for that?
You know, maybe not a surprise, and I don't know if it's necessarily a teaser either, but Peoria has a guy, a pitcher, who you won't find on anyone's top 30, top 40, top 50, maybe even top to 100 prospects in the season, to enter the season for the Cardinals. His name is Mike O'Reilly. You've probably heard his name a little bit by this point. He went to a school named Flagler College. He was drafted in the 27th round of the 2016 draft, last year's draft. I refuse to look up Flagler College because I want to pretend like it's like this imaginary college on the dark side of the moon or something cool like that. You know, like he needed to be an astronaut to attend the school. He's more than lights out. He has held, he's held batters to a batting average against of 0.185, which is more than dominant. Like, that just doesn't happen. Relievers, dominant relievers don't even hold hitters to that low of a batting average. And, he's only allowed 9 walks in like 56 innings. He struck out 49 over those 56 and some change innings. He's a small guy. He might not be 6 foot. He doesn't have electric stuff. He lives in the low 90s. His off-speed pitches are okay. But he's a smart pitcher and he knows how to pitch, and he's made 8 starts for Peoria this year, 11 appearances, and he might be the ultimate sleeper in the organization. I'm ready for him to get promoted from Peoria to Palm Beach because I have no idea if any of these stats are real or not. He could just be monopolizing on the fact that he's going up against less mature, ultra aggressive hitters in the Midwest League, and then you go to Palm Beach where they're obviously a little bit more advanced, and maybe he struggles, but he knows how to pitch. He just knows how to pitch, and I'm anxious to see how that translates. And he started the year in extended spring training. He got called up from extended spring training to the Peoria bullpen on April 22nd, and he made 3 dominant relief appearances before getting his first start. He's taken a no-hitter into the ninth inning. He has a complete game shutout that wasn't the no-hitter that he took into the ninth inning. He's just a really, really interesting guy, and that just goes to show you, you know, we're 2 weeks removed from the Cardinals' 2017 draft. It just goes to show you that, you know, in the 27th round from a school that may or might not actually exist, you can get a quality arm for your organization. And he's the big name. He's been on my list at least 4 or 5 times in the 8 weeks he's been eligible. So that just goes to show you how great he's been.
Yeah, it's amazing how I think anybody, but especially the Cardinals, are able to get quality at the end of the draft. I actually had a chance to interview last year a pitcher that's no longer in the organization, but it was Davis Ward, who was the 40th, the last overall pick in 2014 or 2015.
Yeah.
And, you know, he pitched 2 years for the Cardinals, with the Tommy John surgery around, but he was effective, and to the point that I was a little surprised when they released him this year. You can get talent, everywhere. It's just being able to, being prepared and knowing where to look for it. We did not get a chance to get your opinions on this year's draft. I don't think we talked last week. So, you know, overall, thoughts on that after you've had a little time to digest it?
Yeah, you know, I like it a lot. Here's the thing. I'll never understand. It takes a brilliant mind to be able to maneuver the draft now with the stupid slotting rules and everything and what you can spend over. And, you know, I like where they went early with their first 2 picks with Scott Hurst and Kramer Robertson. I'm anxious to see Kramer Robertson. I'm sure he'll start with, State College Spikes once he gets a little bit of downtime from the College World Series. I'm anxious to see what he has because he's a fiery team leader type who's had a weird career at LSU. And then Scott Hurst is just a really solid defensive center fielder who has an interesting bat that may or may not be anything. You know, they're 2 fine early drafts, but we did talk about it a little bit, and, you know, they have high upside guys. If you can walk out of a draft and in pick 6 through 15 end up with Zach Jackson and Terry Fuller, you're in pretty good shape. And there's a couple other guys in there. There's a guy they took in the 22nd round, last name Benson. He's interesting. He was a D2 power hitter. So I like what they did in the draft. I think what I've decided when it comes to the draft is I'm going to wait until the deadline passes to sign the guys before I dive head first and assessing exactly what their draft class looks like. But right now it is definitely a success as they brought in Fuller and, the big catcher from Florida.
Yeah. And it feels like they've signed a large percentage of these guys already. Just looking at the press releases that they send out, it doesn't feel like there's just a whole lot of guys still waiting to sign, are there?
No, I think it's, they've signed 32 of 40. Mm. I'm gonna end up messing up the names, but there's a kid named Donovan Williams who I believe they took in the 11th round, which means that they can go 125,000 over whatever extra money that they have for him. And then there's another kid that they took a little bit later, and they'll get one or the other of those two. Mm-hmm. And that'll have a big sway on how I personally grade out their draft.
All right. And also, before we're getting to that mid-season time of year, before the year started, you ranked your top 30 guys, and I know you're about to revisit that coming up soon. Do you expect, and you probably haven't gotten deep into it yet, but do you expect a whole lot of changes?
No, you're right. I haven't gotten deep into it. I'm on draft number 4, and I'll probably go through 2 or 3 more drafts. I wouldn't say that there are a lot of changes. I will say that I love my top 10. I think I finally nailed exactly what the Cardinals' top 10 looks like. But the back 5, the back 10, that's where I'm stuck. That's why I keep doing all of these drafts. I'm trying not to be stuck in prisoner of the moment with some of these kids. There's a kid named Andy Young who blew through the Midwest League. He's a power hitting middle infielder. I'm apprehensive about putting him too high. He'll be on my top 30. I know that for a fact. He wasn't on the top 30, as we entered the season. But I'm trying not to get too excited about what he's capable of. But yeah, you'll see a lot of change at the back half for sure.
Well, it's definitely worth it keeping an eye out. And obviously, like we said, always, head over to Redbird Daily and you'll see, Kyle's weekly look at the minors as well. So Kyle, appreciate you joining me again and we'll talk next week.
All right, Daniel. Thank you. It's a pleasure.
All right. Well, appreciate Kyle joining us again. It's, look forward to him updating his, lists over at Redbird Daily, seeing his top 30 prospects. I know he was talking about he's really kind of, hammered on him. I think he's had 4 drafts, already, probably do a couple more. he's working on hard and I know that, it's going to be very good stuff when you see it. You can check out his weekly stuff, over there now, most likely. By the time you listen to this, it should be up if it's not already. And again, it's just kind of interesting to know that there are some people down on the farm that we'll see. I know you and I have talked a little bit about, of course, the people like Weaver and Gonzalez who don't really even make an impact on us anymore. I mean, I don't want to say that. It's just people we've seen before. And it still would be very good to see them back up there, but it doesn't bring the novelty maybe as a Luke Voit does.
Yeah, it doesn't. It's we'll clap and say, okay, it's about time we got these guys back, but it's not going to bring the crowd to their feet like it did with Voit. And, I still would like to see a bunch of those guys, but yeah, I understand the enthusiasm is just not in the same spot. Yeah. Flaherty would probably do that, but I don't, and maybe Alcantara, but I think those two are at least a year away now.
Yeah. Well, and I think that for all the quality and all the talent, there's not an Alex Reyes, there's not an Oscar Tavares, there's not a mm-hmm. guy out there that just that guy that's already captivated the imagination of the fan base. Even before he gets a chance to play. There's not any of those guys out there right now. I mean, the closest thing might be Delvin Perez, and he's 4 years away probably. So I think that's part of it. I mean, there's guys that can help. There's guys that are going to be interesting to see when they get up here and see how often they get a chance to contribute. But I don't know that there's anybody that down there that people are just overly clamoring for, especially now that Voit's up. So we'll see. All right, well, let's get into our last segment, Swinging Away.
Tying run at second base. In the air to right center. This game is tied. Going to third is Pujols.
and it's 9-9. They just won't go away.
And we did not solicit any Twitter questions this time around. So we're kind of flying by the seat of our pants here to do this last segment. Alan, is there anything we haven't touched on yet that you'd like to take a whack at?
We've, covered the pitching quite a bit. Covered the level of play. I think it's funny how I wanted to bring this up that, you know, they're winning and it's not necessarily winning in the way that they had mapped it out. You know, it's, Carpenter's back in the leadoff spot. Everything was going to be contingent on Fowler leading off and Carr pitting third. That didn't happen. They're still missing that middle of the order bat, but it's just not the way that they had mapped it out, but I'm glad that they're kind of putting it together winning regardless. Feel bad for Diaz, but you know, like I said today on Dan's show, we knew there would be some sophomore regression. There's no doubt about that. We didn't think it was be as severe. It was really exposed. I think he got in his own head. I thought his body language was really poor when he made the error on Tuesday night. I think that may have helped the situation going down, but you know, I just want everybody to remember he has less than 200 minor league games. You know, he does not have the at bats. Let's put it in context here. You know, Sosa or Sierra, who's young, he has over 400 minor league games. Carson Kelly, another guy that we've heard that, you know, is right on the cusp of being ready, he has almost 500. Diaz has less than two and missed two whole years of professional baseball. I think it's still a little too early to give up on him. I know we're hearing a lot of stuff about movement and finding another position. I don't think they're willing to do that yet. But we may see a little more extended stay than Grishik had, but I still think that Diaz comes back and we get a, you know, 75% of what we had for Diaz last year makes you a pretty darn good team. And I think that you may expect something along those lines. So just don't give up on him yet. You know, he's still a young guy. He's been through a lot. And I think he'll be back to contribute.
Yeah, I think there's an interesting thing that goes around right now. And I think there's some merit to it, maybe it's not as much, about why the Cardinals have to continue to send these guys down to Memphis to get their kind of, you know, training, get their coaching. Why can't they do that at the big league level? And there's some truth to that. I mean, why, you know, what is Mabry and Mueller, why are they not connecting with some of these guys? There is something to that. But I think what people just don't take into account is more than anything, these guys are sent down to Memphis so they can play in games that basically don't matter. They definitely don't matter to them. And it gives them a chance to tinker or work on stuff. It's kind of like spring training. You know, they've got a chance to really focus on working on their swing. They can work on it during a game and not worry that they're going 0-for-4 because, you know, it's not keeping the team out of the playoffs. You know, they have probably less obligations, to deal with, you know, than you do in the major leagues. I think there's a lot to that. Now, obviously there's something to the coaching down there, because it's obviously been very effective and I feel like the Cardinals did well when Badeska was up in the major leagues, for however much that impact was, you know, I don't know if there was a correlation there, but they did do well while he was there. So I don't, as much grief as Mabry probably deserves, and I'm still not 100% sure that John Mabry's going to be the hitting coach next year, I think that blaming all, you know, this idea that they're going to Memphis because they can't get coaching in the big leagues is not entirely accurate.
No, I agree with that. I thought it was pretty cool that Benji Molina today, I don't know if you saw it on Twitter, he really defended Mabry and said, hey, he's one of the best in the business. And, you know, it's kind of a shut up and quit talking about it. You know, I know where he's coming from. And I agree with you wholeheartedly. There's more to it when these guys get sent down. It's just like hey, you can't get help up here. I do think it makes him look bad, but you know, what else are we supposed to think? You know, I don't know. And then the fans that don't even read into it as much as we do probably think it's really poor. But, you know, I think the Cardinals have a system that's set up well for these guys to go down and, you know, retool and reset and refresh however we want to use it. And I don't think it's that indicative of the big league, the coaching staff. But, you know, it just goes to show if Matheny's involved, people are going to think that it's terrible. Mm. You know, I think that has a lot to do with it. He's a lightning rod for criticism and it rolls downhill. I hate to say it in that situation, but, you know, I just thought it was funny today to where we were kind of joking back and forth on the Redbird Daily, you know, on our message board to where everything goes back to Matheny. Like even the Mosaic stuff today was going back to Matheny. And it's one of those, you're just like, man, no one ever gives up. I mean, it goes right back to him all the time and it's troublesome. So any of these situations, I just kind of cringe because it's always going to go back to him.
Yeah. I mean, there's something to that. And I get Benji Molina has been a big leaguer and I noticed that he was on the Two Birds on a Bat, which he's always on that show. I mean, he's a regular host of that, but I saw that they were promoting a show where he talked about what a hitting coach does and stuff. And I have not had a chance to listen to it. But from what I have heard from Benji Molina, he's not likely to criticize a guy that he worked with, a guy that he's still involved with. So I guess I take Mabry as one of the best with a little bit of a grain of salt. Obviously,
sure.
Obviously, like I said, obviously he knows a lot more about it than I do. And I would not, I wouldn't question that, but it just feels like, you know, Benji's not one to typically criticize too much. I mean, he will do some, and I have heard him kind of get on some of the players, but I feel like a guy that he worked with probably has good opinions of, he's not going to defend him. And, you know, maybe rightfully so. Again, he very well might be. Maybe we give him too much grief to Mabry, but I think you look at the results while he's been here, and I think it's legitimate to start, you know, doing a little bit of questioning about, you know, why the numbers are where they are. But again, I just feel like that's one of those places that if the Cardinals have an off year, I mean, if they're not, if they wind up missing the playoffs and they wind up under 500, that Mabry goes. But we'll have to wait and see. In other news, not directly Cardinal related, just tangentially, Red Sox finally released Alan Craig today. You know, obviously Alan Craig has never hit for them. He's been in the minor leagues for the last couple of years. He's in the last year of that 5-year contract that the Cardinals gave him, so he's getting paid like $11 million or so to play at AAA. It's kind of sad. I mean, in one regard, you know, it's kind of like, well, at least he didn't go to Red Sox and then start hitting again. I mean, at least the Cardinals got a pretty good evaluation of what Alan Craig was going to be. But, you know, Alan Craig had a lot of great moments in St. Louis, and it would have been nice to see him, you know, be able to salvage his career, but he just never seemed to be able to.
It's funny, that drop-off, I think it had to do with a lot of his feet, you know, after hurting his foot, because he was just never the same, never had, you know, weight underneath him or whatnot. It's a sad situation, you know, what happened there, because he was one of those that you felt like was a grinder, and then came up and did his thing, and he always hit. And then after that year, it was just never the same. You know, you kind of feel bad for him a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, he's always going to have those moments from the 11 World Series, those pinch hits.
Mm-hmm.
Had a chance to be MVP that year, depending if the World Series had gone a little bit differently. Caught the last out, you know, so he's always going to have those memories, and he'll be back in St. Louis for, you know, reunions and things like that, but it's just sad to see that it never really panned out as much as it looked like it was going to.
Yeah, that's it. It kind of stings for him. And, I mean, I didn't realize he hadn't been in the big since 15.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that he didn't make an appearance at all last year. So I was like, that's bad. That's one of those situations too, where I would love to see the league-wide scouting report on him. To see what really happened, you know, where you could read into it about, well, his bat speed is just incredibly slow now. He's lost everything. You know, no, his lower half doesn't correlate with the stop app. I would love to see what guys say on that, just so we can get an idea about what really did go on.
I will say also, from what I was reading, I may be wrong, but I think what I saw was that as long as he was in the minor leagues, his contract did not apply to the luxury tax for the Red Sox. And so that's probably part of the reason he stayed in the minors all year long. I mean, not that he was hitting well enough to get a call up, because if he was, he would have. But it's probably one of those reasons he didn't even get a September call up, is they didn't want to, you know, add that salary to what they were paying already. It just wasn't worth it. So it's too bad for him. You know, maybe he'll get a chance to go somewhere else, but like you said, he hasn't been in the big leagues in 2 years. Hasn't hit in probably four. Seems unlikely anybody's going to give him much of a chance. And to be honest, he may not want it. He may be burned out enough after the last few years to just say, you know, I'm going to take my money and go home. Because, you know, that's fair. I think to appreciate it that way. I don't think that, let me see, what did he earn in his career? $31 million. Counting this year's, and he's got $31 million, I think, till this point. He's got a $1 million buyout on his option for next year, which, I assume they've already just exercised since they released him now. So $31-32 million. You know, if he's done well with his investment and saving his money, that'll do you pretty well for a year. So it's very,
yeah, he's not hurting. Shouldn't be.
No. So. You say, hopefully that will work out for him, and then maybe it's time to just ride off into the sunset.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I know. Okay, it's still just a sad story, especially for what he means to so many Cardinals fans.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess that's about it. Before we leave, though, I guess we'll let people know that if you want to turn it off now, you can. Don't just yet. Let me, before you turn it off, let me remind folks that coming up in the beginning of July, we're going to do the Greatest Cardinal Moment Tournament. You can find more information about that at my site. I think I've got the tweet pinned on the top of my Twitter page, so if you want to find it there. 64 Moment Tournament. We'll do it from the July 10th through the end of the season. It's going to be on my site on the Intrepid STL, Red Bird Rants, and Cards blog. Looking forward to doing all that. Okay, so now you can turn it off. But, Alan, before we leave, I think we ought to at least address the big Star Wars news of the last week or so, and that would be the change in directors on the Han Solo film. Lord and Miller, Christopher Lord, Paul, Phil Miller, I believe, taken off the thing, Ron Howard put on it. I'm not big on directors. I mean, I don't really care about directors, who they are. You know, I know that they make an impact on the movie, but when I'm watching it, that doesn't really matter to me.
Yeah.
But it just still feels kind of weird to think that, you know, this thing was almost 3 weeks from being done filming, and they go make that change.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, bottom line is they butted heads with Kennedy, and that's somebody that it shows that she'll pull the trigger real quick on whatever she wants to do. So, whatever direction they were trying to go didn't correlate with the way that she wanted it mapped out. So she got rid of him and brought in Ron Howard. So it's, you know, I agree with you. You know, this probably happens a bunch outside of social media that we never know. But, you know, now it gets blown up, and, you know, Star Wars is so big that anything they do gets, you know, second by second coverage. So I would think that probably plays a pretty big part, but it's not going to affect whether I see it or not. I'm definitely going to be there, you know, opening night. So, you know,
yeah, I mean, like I said, I think casual people going are not going to pay that much attention. They probably won't even notice that much. It does sound like that maybe they didn't have a feel for what Han Solo really should be, and maybe they were going a little bit more comedic than it needed to be. But yeah, I mean, you saw that, you know, Marvel had to switch, directors on Ant-Man, and that turned out pretty well. They didn't do it, you know, during filming, I don't think, but, you know, that kind of thing happens. I think it's just the timing of it was a little strange, but, still looking forward to seeing how it turns out, and I'm sure it'll be great. They continue to hold to that May 18 deadline for Solo. So we'll see if that happens. We got Last Jedi before that, so we'll have to, you know, we got plenty of Star Wars to talk about.
And the new animated series.
The new animated series.
We'll talk about that off the air.
I mean, unless you're talking Forces of Destiny, which is the...
Which is
a few minor little shorts that are coming out, which are going to be very interesting. I'm very excited.
I was like, wait a second, if you don't know that I'm out of my element, that's what I was going to say.
I thought you were talking about it like, replacing Rebels, because obviously Rebels is going into its last season this fall.
Not that I had heard. So I was like, I better not say anything.
Maybe I missed something today. No, the Forces of Destiny, I'm really interested. I mean, it's very short. Cool. They're very short little clips that they're in the vein. I think my daughter has watched the DC Superhero Girls, which they're like 2-3-4 minute little animated episodes, and I think these are going to be similar, where it's just going to be, you know, 3 or 4 minutes, but you can do a lot in 3 or 4 minutes. I'm finding that out. We were watched a lot of Justice League action over this last week with my kids.
Sure.
And it's, you know, 15-minute show, which is really about 13 minutes when you talk about it, and it's amazing how much you can set up and do in a short period of time. You think, oh, wow, 3-4 minutes, that's nothing. You can get a little bit of story in there, especially when you don't have to worry about it introducing the characters, because everybody's going to know who they are. So I'm very excited. I mean, those start on Monday, and then I think they'll have them all together on, they're going to be on YouTube starting Monday. They'll be on Disney XD, I think, the end of the week. Should be interesting to see. And then I think another batch is going to come out later in the year, probably around Force Friday, when all the toys and stuff come out for Last Jedi. So lots of good stuff in the Star Wars universe, and looking forward to seeing it. All right, Alan, I think we've been a little bit shorter this week, which is good. Maybe people will appreciate that. if you're still with us, again, we would like to encourage you, go subscribe to the show over at iTunes, over at Google Play. If you want to do it, you can go to our page, our Podbean page, which is bdib.podbean.com. You'll find a link there for iTunes or a Google Play. It'll be the Podbean app, and you can listen to it through that. But we would, you know, really appreciate you just go ahead and subscribe. You'll get the new shows automatically that way. You don't have to worry about when missing us, because we do this late at night or early in the morning, and maybe you got a busy weekend and you didn't see a link. But it'll be there, right there for you. Always, rate and review. We appreciate those as well. As long as you're giving us 4 or 5 stars. If you're giving us 1 star, just don't bother. It's okay. We're fine. We're fine with that. But if you're going to give us 4 or 5 stars, then yeah, go ahead and click those buttons and give us those, reviews as well. Alan and I will be with you again next week, and hopefully we're talking about, you know, a very strong week of Cardinal baseball, and maybe we're talking about being buyers, and maybe we're talking about a plus 500 team even. That would be a rare thing to do, and we'd like that. So until next week, for Alan, I'm Daniel. Good night.
Good night.
Sooner from the belt to the plate. A swing and a miss, and that's a winner! That's a winner! A World Series winner for the Cardinals!